Okay. So thank you. I appreciate our small but I'm sure enthusiastic turnout. This is my first APHA conference. Very happy to be here, and I'm just happy that there is a session on the connection between housing and HIV, two things people don't always necessarily put together, and I'm very thrilled to be a part of that. I have absolutely nothing to disclose. And I'll start with just a quick word on my background. So I'm going to be speaking about my dissertation research today, which I recently completed. But before I went back for a PhD, I've been working as a social worker in Chicago, primarily in managing supportive housing programs for people who are homeless and HIV positive. So this is something I've been aware of from a practitioner viewpoint for a while, the fact that people who are homeless and unstably housed are, in fact, at a higher risk for contracting or transmitting HIV. The research that we have, and we do have really a very fast growing body of research to support this, the research points to several potential pathways between homelessness or housing instability and HIV risk. One of those is certainly increased substance use, so people who are homeless or unstably housed more likely to use drugs, often heavier alcohol use, that can put people in situations where they're at increased risk for HIV. Also trading sex for money and having multiple sexual partners. So a lot of studies have shown even when people aren't trading sex for money per se, it's pretty common for both homeless men and women to have multiple partners who they may go to get different financial and material needs met. And one thing I noticed as I dove into this from a research perspective and started looking at the studies was a lot of studies would actually combine people in many different living situations into one big category, and they would call that a homeless or an unstably housed category. So that might include people who are literally homeless, living on the street, might include people in shelters, people in hotels or SROs, single room occupancy housing, maybe people doubled up, often all grouped together. And I became interested in trying to break that down a little bit and seeing what differences there might be between some of these different groups and if that had any implications for HIV risk. I don't have a lot of time here to go into theory, but the theoretical framework that informed this study was something called the risk environment framework, which is really a shift from thinking about high-risk populations to high-risk spaces and high-risk places. And so that was what informed my thinking there. Now, because this is my dissertation research, and I found doing a dissertation, you often have to get more and more narrowly focused than you ever thought you would. I ended up focusing on one very specific type of housing, which is SROs, single room occupancy. So I'll say a quick word about what those are. This is a very basic type of housing, often called the housing of last resort. These are places where people can rent small rooms, usually under 200 square feet, often with a shared bathroom, no kitchen or cooking facility. So it's more like a dormitory style of room rather than a studio apartment. Rent, of course, may vary depending on location, but a ballpark figure would be between $300 to $500 a month market rate rent for one of these rooms. A lot of SROs are just privately run, privately managed by for-profit companies, just like most other apartment buildings. There are SROs in some cities that are run by public housing or nonprofit housing providers. Those may operate a little bit differently and provide different kinds of services on site, more like supportive housing. But most are just privately run. And then something that's, I think, not well understood about SROs, both in research and just in general, is this idea of, are they primarily a transitory type of housing where you see people bouncing around between the street, the SRO, maybe other kinds of housing, or are they potentially stable housing, perhaps for people that can't really afford many options other than that? So that's something I'll come back to again at the end. So my research questions, or at least part of my research questions that I'll be speaking on today, is I became interested in looking at who really lives in SROs and where do they come from. So where did they live before living at SROs, specifically looking at street homelessness and seeing if they did have that background of being literally homeless on the street, and if so, if that had any implications for their HIV risk behavior. So to do this study, I did a cross-sectional survey design with SRO residents in Chicago. I decided to focus on one neighborhood, Uptown, which had the largest concentration of these buildings, and I decided to also focus just on privately owned for-profit buildings rather than mixing apples and oranges of having some privately owned and some that were more nonprofit supportive housing. So I did venue-based recruitment at 10 privately owned SROs in this neighborhood of Uptown. Most of these buildings did not have an appropriate safe or private space where we could have done data collection, so I was able to partner with a community organization that did HIV prevention work that happened to have a small satellite office in this neighborhood. So what we did, I used a recruitment card approach, and my research assistant and I would go to these buildings, stand in the lobby or at the entrance where people were coming and going, ask people if they live there, tell them about the study, and then if they were interested in participating, we would give them a recruitment card, It had the address of the community office where to go to do the survey. We tried to schedule a time for them to come in, give them that card, and then ask them to bring that card with them, and we would collect it back when they came in. So that was meant to give us some assurance that the people we were recruiting at these buildings were, in fact, the same people coming in to do the survey. That was not 100% foolproof, of course, because we were not asking for IDs or other forms of documentation or identification or anything like that. There was $20 cash compensation for doing the interview. This was an interviewer-administered survey, so a structured survey, but given by an interviewer, which was mostly me. And our final N, after we did eligibility screening, checking the data, cleaning the data, all of that, final N was 163 people, which was a little under 80% of all the individuals recruited. So to quickly walk you through some results here, starting just with some demographics, the sample was primarily male, 78%. That was expected. Homeless populations as well as SROs do tend to be more male. In terms of race, it was pretty diverse, 63% African Americans, 28% whites, 10% other races, including Native American, Asian American, and also participants identifying as more than one race. Also 7% identifying as Hispanic or Latino ethnicity. Our age range, we had someone as young as 21, as old as 76, but with a mean of 50. So it did tend to be a little bit on the older side. Some health and some other social issues affecting this sample. HIV status, we had 6% by self-report, reporting HIV positive status. Mental illness was very common, 68% of the sample, so about two-thirds, reporting serious mental illness like bipolar, major depression, schizophrenia, things like that. Incarceration was also extremely common, reported by 74% of participants, and about half reported having at least one prior felony. Now, I asked people about homelessness in their lifetime using a pretty specific HUD definition, homeless meaning places not meant for human habitation or emergency shelters, and 83% of participants had been homeless at least once, so that was very common. However, only 18% had been homeless relatively recently in the past 12 months, and I'll be coming back to that in just a minute. In terms of income, average monthly income, $722, so very low income sample. SSI, Social Security Supplemental Income, was the primary source for most folks. And average rent in these places was $316, but we did have some people who had scattered site housing subsidies where they only had to pay 30% of their income as rent. So some of them were actually paying below market rate. So if we looked at the average rent for market rate, it would be a little higher than that. And then these are the HIV risk behaviors that I was looking at, primarily looking recent, so just in the past 30 days, and looking at things like illicit drug use other than marijuana, alcohol misuse, having more than one sexual partner, having sex without a condom, or having sex while drunk or high. And you can see those were reported by between about 17 to 30% or so of the sample. I had two risk behaviors that were even less common than that, so I did not have a lot of people reporting recent IV drug use or recent sex exchange, so I had to look at those two things as lifetime variables just to have something to model there. And those were still relatively not too common, 11% for lifetime IV drug use, 21% on lifetime sex exchange. If we do look at each of these as a discrete risk behavior and looking only over the past 30 days, then 42% of the sample would have no risk to report, 26% would have one risk behavior, and then that final 32% is where most of that risk seems to be concentrated. And this is a quick look at my multivariate analysis here. These are odds ratios. So across the top is the HIV risk behaviors, and then on the left are the control variables, so mainly demographics, also HIV status, prior felony status. And then what I was really interested in looking at was that homeless in the past year category, so comparing those people who had been homeless in the past 12 months with the rest of the sample. And you can see, even controlling for these other factors, people who had been homeless in the past 12 months were more likely to report certain risk behaviors, including illicit drug use, sex while drunk or high, and IV drug use. So a few quick limitations here to mention. This is, of course, a cross-sectional study, so we can't say anything about true prediction or anything like that. This relied on self-report data, and not only self-report data, but data gathered by an interviewer, so a lot of concerns about social desirability bias there. Pretty non-probability sample from just one geographical area, really from one neighborhood, so hard to say how much these results would generalize to SRO populations in other cities or even really in other parts of Chicago. And finally, this is a pretty small sample for a quantitative study. It's not a particularly high-risk sample, just a general sample of SRO residents, so there's only so much detail that I'm able to model in terms of those HIV risk outcomes. And I think a lot of HIV studies, you'll see much larger samples or sometimes entirely high-risk populations that can get a lot more sophisticated in that. So despite these limitations, I think there's a few things we can draw from this. For one thing, these findings suggest that living in an SRO is not the same thing as being homeless on the street. So these two things do sometimes get somewhat conflated, both I think in research and just in the media sometimes or in general. But in terms of housing, the SRO population in this study was actually pretty stable. We did ask people about how long they had lived in their current SRO, and the mean was about 3 years. So in terms of residents, it did seem to be people were not bouncing around between the street and the SRO for the most part. However, we did find that people who had been homeless in the past 12 months were more likely to engage in some of these risk behaviors. So to me, that suggests that there may be a subpopulation within SROs that is behaving with a little bit higher level of risk, and those folks may benefit from some type of brief targeted intervention, so services to help people make that transition from street homelessness into SRO housing, help people take a look at their risk behaviors, maybe some harm reduction focused counseling, so that hopefully people in that transition can behave in less risky ways. And finally, I'll end by saying a few things about SROs again. So this is coming at a time when SROs in Chicago and really in many cities are being rapidly demolished. Often they're located in areas that are gentrifying. Often they are torn down or sometimes converted into more expensive types of housing. But I think this study speaks to the need to think about preserving at least some SROs as both a short and long-term alternative to homelessness. Just based on the very low incomes of the people in this study, most of these residents would not have really been able to afford any other housing options in Chicago, or at least any other independent housing. And so SROs, while they are not perfect, they did provide people with a relatively affordable, relatively stable housing option. And so I think we can think about SRO preservation not only in terms of the homeless prevention argument, that's probably the obvious one, but knowing what we know about these links between homelessness and HIV risk behavior and substance use and addiction, I think we can also think about arguing this from an HIV prevention standpoint and from a general health promotion standpoint. And then the final thing I'll say, I think we also need to think about some basic policies or programs that could help link current SRO residents to services. One thing I noticed partnering with the organization where I used their office to do the data collection, that was an HIV prevention program in the neighborhood where these buildings were located. But a lot of people, when they came in to do the study, would comment, oh, I never knew this was here. I've walked by before, but I never knew what this was. And for some people, it was a really nice connection. They realized, okay, now I can, you know, get an HIV test here, or a Hep C test here. I can pick up some condoms. I can tell my neighbor to go use the needle exchange here. So just some simple programs to link people in SROs with the available services that may be in their communities, so people are getting their prevention and their health and their social services needs met. That's all. Thank you. Mm-hmm.